Do we decide who's talking first?
I can go first.
This is it. This is the live take. We're just posting this.
Okay.
Welcome to the Writer's Block podcast, a new podcast where we talk about DWA scripts. My name is Betty LaFlame. My pronouns are she, her.
I'm totally not Natalie, which is totally not my name. My pronouns are also she, her.
Hi, I'm Everest Utopia, and I'm he, him. Is my thing recording?
Yes.
Yes.
Yours is recording. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're doing it. We're doing it.
We're very professional here.
This is a very professional podcast.
So we wanted to do this particularly because we wanted to highlight scriptwriters in the community and talk about writing in a more like macro sense, not like less about like, you know, this is how you write, you know, this is how you format it, this is how you, you know, write dialogue, one-sided dialogue. You know, we wanted to do like, we wanted to look at scripts, talk to their authors, and just talk about like the ins and outs of that side of the community.
Writing is a craft, how it writers collaborate with voice actors, how that process kind of works, and what inspires scripts.
Absolutely, yeah. Avalon, do you have anything to say about?
I think I'm predominantly not known as a scriptwriter, which I think is part of why I'm here. So I think I've written upwards of like somewhere between 25 and 30 scripts, I think. But I think I'm mostly here to offer like a perspective from like the side of people reading them out loud.
You're our token VA.
Although
the token VA.
25 scripts like is like a big number.
That's yeah. Like as many as I have, honestly.
Even you've written, have you written like 100 scripts or something?
It's like 150, but that's beside the point.
Oh, sorry. I only saw the post where you wrote 100.
Yeah,
I think it's great to think about what people think about when they are making content here. So, and we just wanted to make it so everybody knows that this is just like a normal thing that people do and anybody can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like some sort of mystical art. It's just absolutely, like a, yeah. You can just think about stuff that you want to think about and write it down on a page. So
most of the scripts, Avalon, you write are for yourself, right? You don't offer them. Yeah. So
they're like offers that are included in the posts, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've done that sometimes where it's like a script you write for your own voice, but you put like,
I mean, that was Goth IHOP for me, so yeah.
There you go.
And like, also, I think it's useful for people to have the script there because I know some people like to read along while they're also listening. So
yes, for inclusivity, mm-hmm. Very yes. Important. Well, yeah. Anyway, sorry. the reason I bring it up is because, you know, I've talked to quite a few VAs who I talk about their writing and like, you're a writer, and they will say almost the same thing. I don't write. I just write for myself. It's like as if writing not for yourself makes you quote unquote a real writer. That's not true. You know, yeah, writing is writing.
Pretty sure I was one of those people who
said that. You were.
You were.
It's fine.
It's okay.
Yeah. Anyone can be a writer. I think that's part of the key like theses of this podcast is anyone
absolutely.
Can write.
We should tell people the podcast tagline, which is if you write it, they will come.
Yep. It is funny because there are two senses of the word come for anyone who's confused. Oh.
Okay. So, in our inaugural podcast, we are talking about two scripts technically, but they're in one overarching timeline story. That's a better way to put it. It's Please Be Kind, Remember to Rewind by our very own Totally Not Natalie. Also, to the dear listener, we are recording this on Nat's 2-year cake day. Yay!
Are we singing? Happy cake! No.
I don't know the words.
I obviously love this community very, very much. So Also, I was like kind of recruited into using my script first. This was not really my decision, but we're here now. So I'm excited.
We didn't plan this. I was just like, oh, that's very fitting. It's very fitting that we're doing this today with your script. So happy coincidence. Happy coincidence.
Yay.
Okay.
So I guess we can get into talking about this script, right?
Yes. Let us do that.
I actually treated this as if it were, I tried to treat it as if it were one script with like an act break in the middle.
Yeah, but that's really, I think, the best way to go about reading it.
Should we explain what it is first?
Yeah, let's talk about it. Yes. Do you want to talk about what the script is, maybe?
Yeah. So I got this idea because I've been wanting to do a 90s themed video rental store script for a while that really kind of played with the idea of the video rental store as a setting. I love in a lot of my writing to develop settings as characters where the setting is almost a character in the story. I think this is where I really wanted to do that. So it takes place in a local video rental store in a small town in 1999 with two characters who were in their late teens, 18, 19 years old, for the first part. And the second script takes place 20 years later in present day when they meet up again after having kind of gone their separate ways in life. And it's about this kind of reconciliation between past and present.
And it's really good. It's a really good script, friends.
It's also A for A. Because I love A for
A scripts.
It
is.
Yeah.
Yes, and we will talk more about like A for A versus naming gender tags later when we get more into the script. Did you want to go over some of like your favorite lines, Avalon, or something?
Ooh, yeah.
I have a couple. Let's take a look.
I have a couple. You want to start and I'll catch up?
Yes. So I really like the beginning lines that are like, hey, welcome back. Are you just returning these? Excellent. Did you remember to be kind and rewind? That's great. I also like in the next, like the two lines after that, when you use the word curtains, curtains on your repeated Titanic viewings. And like curtains is a homophone of...
Mm-hmm.
Curtains?
Yep.
And so I was like, what? And then I was like, oh, it's curtains. And I was like, I love a good use of curtains.
I'm here for you.
What is curtains for those of us who are not as educated?
Curtains? It like, oh, I don't even know.
Because I definitely just read it as curtains.
Curtains. Curtains. Definition.
It's fine. I think I also might have just written it as curtains, but you know.
Maybe I can't find a good. They're all just using curtains. It's fine. I think it's like to encroach. Some
weird fever dream.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Maybe I'm just making up this word. It's not real. None of this is real.
It's fine. I do think I wrote it originally as curtains, but I do like words that have a lot of like double entendre. You know, it's fine.
Yeah. Big fan of the double entendre. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You can tell from both the title and the tagline of this podcast. Also, Nat's pun game is on point always. Oh, yes, Avalon. Sorry.
I was going to say, there is one, the first line that I ran into that I was really fond of was, it basically, the script opens and it's basically like, he's this like goofy, like, I read it. I treated it as a he because I just like read this out loud as I was reading it. Mm-hmm. And the speaker is sort of this like goofy video store employee with like they've got all these like goofy conspiracy theories about like there's video overlords who are like trying to like take over the world with video and like they're doing all this like crazy joke stuff. And it's very like teasing and laughing, and like there's all this like fake drama about like Tamagotchis and stuff like that. And then you hit the end of the like second page or so, and it just says, "Yeah, this is what I do all day. I come up with 100% entirely plausible conspiracy theories to amuse you with, and you can hate me for it. but I still made you smile, so it was worth it. And I loved how that one line, but I still made you smile, so it was worth it, like, contextualized the past, like, two pages of just, like, goofiness, where it's just like, oh, you set up this, like, you set up these pins where it's all the stuff that this is these, like, these weird ass rambles, and like it establishes the character as like goofy and like friendly and all this stuff, but then like you took all of that and then you retroactively contextualize it with like they're in a there's a relationship here between these two characters, and like it's like a deep one, and I really liked that.
Yeah, it's I think one of those tricks with a lot of I think more character development esque writing, which I enjoy, is how do you convey intimacy, and how do you convey intimacy in a short amount of time? I think humor is a great way to do that, but also like saying sentences that you wouldn't feel comfortable saying to just anyone, I think helps a lot with kind of getting that, oh, we can take it to this place. These people know each other. They're fooling around. It's kind of nice to just kind of have those kind of like breaks or pauses in terms of what the meta text that you're trying to communicate to the listener is.
Yeah, it was a very show don't tell moment, right? Like, you could have just written like, I care about you a lot and we have a history together, but like you really like implied it here, which was really cool, and I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think both ways of doing it are valid, but it's always nice when you can do something that's not, listen, we've been friends for years. It's a valid line, but there are other ways of getting that line. So
yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
I think you did a good job of showing people in here. Like, this is a good example of how it's okay for people to like, not everything has to be like a beeline to go have sex, you know, in an audio. Like, there's room for people to just like be humans in these, and I like that.
Thank you.
Kind of along those same lines, or like with later when they were talking about the Truman Show, and he's like the speaker is surprised that the listener actually likes it, because apparently they're a video movie snob, and they say, sweet, then we're definitely watching it together. I want to explain to you why you're actually right. Well, you're actually right this time, and maybe make out during the boring parts, because duh, that's what second viewings are for. You already know the plot, so you don't have to rewind if you get a little dot 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 distracted. I love a good dot 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 in the sentence, especially when it's distracted. Yes. And you're right, it really, like you were saying, Avalon, it really, like, shows that, you know, like, this isn't just, these aren't even just, like, people who know each other. These are people who know each other very well and have a very deep connection, all without telling us.
Yeah, I mean, that is always, I think, the trick, and that line I think you kind of toe with this particular type of erotic writing is, the listener is generally at least somewhat of a self-inserted character, insofar as most of the audience wants to pretend to be the listener, having this person talk to them. So there's this question of, okay, how much personality do I decide to give the listener? And how do I walk that balance of, I like to give my listener characters personality, but doing it in a way that doesn't necessarily turn off anyone who wants to listen to it. So here I thought it would be kind of fun to explore the idea of, oh, the listener is somebody who's kind of engages with the banner with the performer character, where they're not someone who's just going to love every single movie that the performer character suggests. They fight back. So that would be kind of a fun role for the listener to imagine themselves in, without it necessarily taking the listener out so far, if that makes sense.
I definitely noticed that about this. I was like, oh, like, I felt like I was not watching So, like, from somebody who's made, like, a lot of audios, right? Like, I usually, weirdly enough, like, treat the listener as sort of, like, a blank slate. And I'm not very, like, much a character giver to the listener. But I felt like I was listening to an actual, like, relationship between two real people play out when I was reading the script out, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, it's a fun line to, I think, kind of walk. Where you're trying to, like, make it feel like an intimate scene, but not have that intimacy take anyone out of the scene.
Yeah. There's like a moment, I think, in the second half where the speaker is like, oh, like, you used to be, like, more of, like, a geeky person or something like that. And I was like, oh, like, This is actually interesting because you're like, you're kind of applying like a personality to the listener, right? I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh yeah, thanks. I definitely like
adding. Should we move on?
Yeah, sure.
No. Should we move on to the second half? To the, that was the, what is it, please be kind, and the next one is remember to rewind.
Rewind. Yep. I love that. Yes. I'm just kind of bouncing around. I thought there was, there's more in the first half, obviously.
Okay.
There's one part where they go to the back of the store, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they, that's where the canoodling happens, if you will. they get hanky panky done in the back of this video store in the adult video section, right? And there's nothing but a curtain separating them from the rest of the store. And so there's a little bit of hold the moan, right? Like a little bit of risky business happening in this scenario, right? Because it's like a, it's like an online, like, I don't like, no, I hope nobody comes into the store and like notices mm-hmm. that we're fucking in the back room. And my favorite part of how you displayed this was there's a line where the speaker says, I promise it's safe. No one ever comes here at this time. And then like the first thing I like that went off in my mind was like, man, that's exactly the kind of words that would make me feel like someone's going to come in here right now. So I thought it was really cool that you created a little bit of that like riskiness, mm-hmm. With sort of like a promise of safety, right? It's like when you're, when I like play games and I'm like, it's fine. And it's like, obviously not fine. It was kind of like that. And I thought that was really neat. I liked that. That was the effect it had on me, at least.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, I'm a fan of voyeurism, but I'm a fan of that more like risky, will they see me type voyeurism than actually people yeah. watching me type voyeurism, which is what I wanted to create Same. Here. And especially with the characters being older teenagers, I really wanted to capture that kind of just moment you have on late nights when you're a teenager that just feel kind of magical, where you feel comfortable taking Absolutely, risks yeah. as you're just young and you don't care. I really wanted that to be kind of the key, I think, moment or emotion of the script.
Yeah, you talk about like those magical moments later on. You're like, you say, like, I want to savor this moment and I want to savor you. I want to remember what you looked like, what you smelled like, what you tasted like. And I want this night to be magical. I don't care if it's cheesy. You can think I'm corny if you want, but I want to remember this moment, this night with you. Like, and like, you have those in real life, you know, you have those moments where you're like, you like all of a sudden will realize that, you know, this is going to be over and will be a memory.
And it's very La La Land. Yeah.
I never saw that, so I'm going to take your word for it.
I was not inspired by that, but it's an interesting comparison. Yet is kind of chasing this feeling that you once had was a lot of, I think, the emotion for the second script, where it's wanting to reconnect with something that you've kind of lost, even though you've gained so much over the course of 20 years. Mm-hmm.
Let me see if there's anything else I have to note about part one.
Okay.
Well, like the idea of the sex resume towards the end. That was funny. That was a funny like little thing.
Oh yeah, crossing it off the bucket list.
The bucket list. It's they're like, personally, I might vote for the front at the store next time.
Yeah. Okay. Here's one. I've got two additional notes for the first half. I'll start with the second one because I think it's more relevant for, I guess, for people listening. So you do all this stuff. They do the hanky panky. They turn yourselves around, and then you improv the orgasm. And then you have these lines, right? Oh wow, you were fantastic. Trust me, I'm very happy. We can cross sex in the adult video store off the list. Don't you feel accomplished now, right? These are the lines that happen right before the second resume, and I think this is fun because I think one thing that sometimes we forget to do is like we get to the sex and we do the sex and then like the audio just kind of ends, right? And what I like about this is that it keeps going. There's like a whole page of like dialogue after the improv the orgasm. And I think those lines that I just listed are really good because I think they line up with how I think about making people feel in audios, right? Because, like, you have this first line that says, oh, wow, just wow. Oh, fuck, you were fantastic, babe, right? Like, this is pretty clear. Like, I want the listener, when I'm making an audio, to feel good about themselves in some way, right? So, like, there's no better way than just, straight out saying you were fantastic, right? But then you go right on, and then the next one is like, yes, really. And it says, trust me, I'm very happy, right? Because then you're not only making the listener happy, you're not only saying the listener was good, but then you're saying that the listener had an effect on me as the speaker, right? Now you made me happy. And then now the listener gets to feel good about making the speaker feel happy, right? And then the last part is, we can cross sex in the adult section of a video store after this. Don't you feel accomplished now, right? So now you're congratulating them on being good. You're congratulating them on making you feel good, right? The speaker feel good. And then you're congratulating them on like knocking an item off their bucket list. So like you just do this like 1, 2, 3 punch. And I think that's something good for like people who are thinking about writing scripts is like, how do you want your listener to feel, right? Like we do, I think when we write scripts, it's a lot of like, oh, I want the speaker to say all these things. But like the end product is going to make a listener feel a certain way. And I think there's a good amount of effort here into making the listener feel good about themselves, which is really often what we're here to do, right? So I thought that was really cool. And I think that warrants like, this guy, like, this is like a nice tip. So, like, I would be like, oh, like, look at this. Like, look at all the stuff that Nat did here to like make the listener feel good. So it's a good example, I think.
Yeah, it's, thank you for that. In part, just because I always find the line after the orgasm to be the hardest line to write. I'm just like, okay.
Oh, absolutely.
What a way.
It is, you're right. Oh, my God. Like, yeah, what do you say just, next?
Yeah.
I just had sex.
There are a few times where I've wanted to go, hey, high five.
Oh,
you have to do that now.
Somebody here who made a lot of audios, and one of her like trademarks was a lot of high fives after sex. So that's absolutely a thing.
Yeah, you could definitely do that.
Long inactive account, but
it's definitely one of those things where I do, and I think smart to know this. I try to end on a sense of security, unless the scene's specifically meant to feel insecure. Mm-hmm. Because I want it to give the listener just this kind of sense of, oh, okay, there's a cool down process. We're here. We're secure. Because listening to an audio is a really vulnerable experience. You're exploring sex and kink. And even if it's
a
stranger, it's like you want to give somebody that sense of, oh, okay, it's okay that we did this. Here's some stuff to kind of cool down with for a bit.
Right. Like you wouldn't end like a fantasy novel on like the conclusion of like, the climactic battle. There's an aftermath, mm-hmm. right? Like,
yeah, the descending action,
the hero's journey.
And this one is, I think, a little bit longer than some of my other ones, just because this is more, I think, plot based. So I wanted to like establish the characters. Plus, I really wanted to get in that Saved by the Bell line. I was just like, I'm going to work for that because I really want that reference in there. So that was part of it. But in general, I do try to give people like a few lines of, I think, cool down. Because the thing with audio as a function is it's like any other type of media. You can always turn it off, or the listener can always turn it off whenever they're like satisfied. So if there was anyone here who didn't actually want to listen past the orgasm, they could do that. But the extra stuff's there for anyone who does want to.
That's a good way to think about it. Yeah, more of it. Absolutely.
I love that.
It's like how you skip through all the like ads at the beginning of a YouTube video when they're promoting like Squarespace, and you're like, okay, don't tell me about Squarespace. And then it's the same thing.
Can't relate. I have premium.
That's wow, fancy. Rich.
No.
Fancy over here.
But yeah, I totally get that. And like, I do sometimes do that. Like when I listen to audios, like, and it just kind of have a long, if it kind of has like a long, like aftercare section, sometimes I will just turn it off, and it'll be just like, that totally makes sense. Like I used to kind of feel guilty about that. It's like, oh, I didn't even finish it, and it's like, no, I'm done, I'm finished with it, you know. So
I mean, sometimes I'll just listen to the same parts of audios over and over again, just because I really like how the performer said one particular line. I listened to the whole thing too a couple times, so I'm just like, oh, this one section is really just amazing.
Oh, we've talked about this before. Yeah, I've done the same.
Only to your own voice though. Oh, I sound so good here.
Oh, never to my own. Never, ever. I had one more note about the first half. Let me see if I can find it. I thought it was interesting. Like, you gave the speaker a lot of personality here, right? So, like, there's a line where they're how is that? Like, right after they've taken their shirt off. There, how is that? Do I look hot? And then, like, you did a really interesting job of creating sort of like this like confident, kind of like fun and like cocky, like speaker, mm-hmm. right? There's yeah. a lot of that in this where they're like, if I want to say self-centered, but not in a negative way, like they're very just like aware of themselves and are not afraid of that. And I thought that was fun. And then there's one moment right at the end. Sorry, not at the end, right before they have sex. So there's "Let me kiss you all over," and then there's kissing, and then it says, but let's start slow. I want to savor the moment. And something about that really struck me was this little stutter in here. You put "but" dash "but," like, right?
Like, yeah, let's so there's, start slow.
He's,
yeah.
He's not all bluster and like, you know, like, am I hot? Yeah, I know I'm hot shit, right? Like there's a moment in here. There's moments of vulnerability to this character too. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. Right?
And it's kind of portrayed through this like little stutter. So it's like a cool way of like, you know, you can tell things about a character through the way that you intend for the dialogue to be read, right? Like you didn't have to put the stutter in here, mm-hmm. but there is one here. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, one of the things that I think start the most with at least my process in character creation in terms of understanding a character is understanding how the character is vulnerable. Because everyone's vulnerable, regardless of how competent they are. And I like writing competent characters just because competent characters are frankly fun to write. You can do a lot with them and you can make a lot of jokes because they're not afraid to make those jokes. But knowing even when those confident characters are vulnerable or when they get flustered, I think, is something that's really, really important. Like here, I really wanted to pull off the fact that the performer really, really likes the listener character. They do. And they care about impressing them. And that makes them a little bit self-conscious. But it's also what drives their confidence, because what they're trying to do is impress the listener. And having that kind of show both in their vulnerability and in their confidence is something that was really important to me for the section.
Nice.
So yeah, that's I think section one. The two of these are titled "Please Be Kind," and the second one is titled "Remember to Be Rewind." By the way, so for this one, they were basically confident 19-year-olds in a small town fucking,
as one is. Yes.
Yeah, like you do in 1999. So. And then the next one, they are late 30s adults who have jobs and lives. Relatively optimistically happy lives, to be fair, given the current situation. But still something missing.
Yes. Yes, sorry. It doesn't take very very long for them to realize that, you know, the speaker is the speaker and the listener is the listener, I guess is the best way to put it. Like, because it's clear from, it becomes clear over the course of the script that they have lost touch with each other. And this is their, you know, reconnecting moment. Their, there's a word for it, but like, this, like where they like stick,
like rekindling.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to make it so that the scripts work really, really well together, which I hope that they do. But also that, and I've learned this trick because I've done a number of different series. Sometimes people are just going to want to listen to one thing, so I like having separate sex scenes and having them work as solo things. And I do think this at least kind of works as just a solo audio about people reminiscing. Even if you didn't get the first half, I hope a lot of it would still make sense to the listener.
I would say so.
Yeah, yeah. I think it definitely does. Like, yeah, the two paint like a complete picture together, but definitely the two halves are like entities and in and of themselves, I want to say.
Yeah. Like, the second one's about nostalgia, but, like, the first one, you gave them something to be nostalgic for.
Exactly, yes.
Another big, I think, trick with this is just, because this was a 20-year period, I worked really hard to try to get the dialogue, make it seem like it was the same character, but 20 years older. In terms of, like, varying the syntax just enough that you got, like, older without it being so distant that this did not feel like the same character as in the first part.
Ooh, I picked up on that.
It really does show, yeah.
Opposite way.
Toriyama.
Yeah, because I was like, these characters talk similarly enough to the characters from the first one that you're almost like, are they really 20 years older? But then it's like that feeling of like when you go to your hometown mm-hmm. and you kind of just like regress a little bit back to how you were when you lived there. Like, so I thought it worked really well.
Oh, thank you.
So we're just going through the second part.
Yeah, if you yes. want to.
Let's see. Yeah, this is where I found that line. You're still a geek, just a better dressed geek. Right? That's what I'm talking about. There's some more of that like cocky swagger, like that self-centeredness, not in a bad way, mm-hmm. right? I think we often think of self-centeredness as a bad thing. But he's like self-aware, right? I looked old, right? He's talking about looking old. He says, if I say you look old, then that means I look old and I'm not ready to do that. And there's like a lot of I there, but it's like in a kind of charming mm-hmm. way, right?
Yeah.
He kind of preserved that like self-awareness from the first end. The other cool part, I think, is right after that, where they're talking, and they're talking about, like, slang, right? And then the speaker says, I think that the kids call it a glow-up or something. I'm not sure. I kind of fell off the slang train after 2002. The people say, what's up? And that weird prolonged speech pattern. Blah, 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 blah. Even if I do wish I could call up your old answering machine, right? Just to hear that old rap put as you leave a message recording. And it's like, a cool, like... Because you got to think of it from the listener point of view, right? You're giving them something to come back to here with all of this, like, all this old stuff, right? And it's sort of like a frozen in time moment where, like, obviously, like, things have changed for the two characters, but, like, there's a sense of comfort, I think, that's being provided here in all this, like, you know, I fell off the slang train. I don't know the new slang. I'm still the old person that you know me to be. Like, you can go, like, being with me will let you go back in time just a little bit.
That's true, absolutely,
right? Which yeah. I, it was just kind of the thesis of the script here, right? Like,
yeah, it's one of those, it's I think a tricky line to kind of ride, because the danger with this is it feels too much like a gimmick, and you don't want the like setting to be too gimmicky to the point where it's, I've done comical 90s scripts before, like the Kool-Aid Man script. But this was more like, I want to explore the concept of nostalgia from this particular angle in this particular time period. So it's this, I think, kind of idea that the nostalgia is here and we're referencing it, but the reference to it is kind of providing this deeper intimacy, if that makes sense. Or kind of this longing, almost,
yeah.
at certain points.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's like what Avalon said, like a frozen moment. And they even kind of like reference that idea with like the old pictures, you know, where it's like, oh, they still have the old photo booth shots that they in their wallet
mm-hmm.
that they took at the yeah. just a couple of mall rats and bucket hats.
I love the bucket hats.
Yes.
The inclusion of bucket hats in this.
Your fun part's definitely trying to find the references to stick in. I love putting like little hunts of stuff in my scripts. And like, I think another like interesting thing to toe here is the fact that like, just full disclosure, I wasn't old enough to be 19 in 1999. So I don't know what that experience was like. And it's like, I think part of what I wanted to do with this as well is create that sense of nostalgia that even if these weren't your particular nostalgic items, it still works as kind of a, like, oh, yeah, I remember something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the core feeling is one that we all share. So even if you don't get the particular references, you still understand what it's about, what the core of the script is, of what the characters are talking about.
Yeah, although I don't think you knew what Tamagotchis were, Betty. So thanks for that.
Actually, I was joking. I didn't know what Tamagotchi was. I was just doing a joke. It's funny. Okay, I won't harp on the that this too much, but like it is interesting reading this being a lot younger than this, because I was a literal child in 1999. So it's like these things are all things that I've heard of, but like they don't really exist in a concrete place and time because they exist like within my childhood memory. You know what I mean? So like it was kind of interesting to read this and to kind of like have like create anchor points for these pieces of my childhood by going through this, because like I'd heard of Tamagotchis, you know, and you know, we had tapes and like bucket hats and like things like that, but like I never really associated it with any specific time. And so it was nice in that way. Like that was my own personal takeaway from it.
Yeah, I too am very much a child of the internet era. So again, I obviously was not old enough to have this particular experience, which I think is part of why I was interested actually in exploring it. So I think there is this mystique for anyone who's grown up in the post-internet era of just, how did people do things before the internet? Date before the internet?
And who did people get their audio porn?
Once upon a time, there was a site called Literotica. It's still around. Oh, man.
And I mean, I have seen, like, things from the 90s with, like, adult or late teenage characters, which is a lot of where this is inspired from, of just, oh, this is where connection was at this particular point before we had phones in our pockets, where you would, instead of just texting your friend while they were working at the video store, you would just go down there and talk to them.
This is something I actually wanted to ask you about. Have you seen, there's a Netflix documentary called The Last Blockbuster?
No, but I feel like I have to watch it now.
No, we need to now, yeah.
It's literally, so there's only one more Blockbuster remaining on like the face of the planet, and it's in Oregon. And apparently it's just like a tourist hotspot for this like small town, because of the amount of nostalgia that people have for going into a video store and picking out a video, you know, with their girlfriend, with their family, with like, you know, like, I had that experience of like going with my family to like the video store, and like we would all just like scatter and like everybody would like find a movie. And
yes, exactly.
You know, there's a whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Road trip?
Road trip to Oregon.
I mean, they still do have like small mom and pop video stores some places, which is also, I can't say it because it would dox myself, but this was also inspired by one of those that was close to me when I was in college.
I had just watched it recently. I watched it like a week or two ago. Nice. And then I started reading the script and I was like, it was a really good time for me to watch that documentary.
Yeah, I think it was also, I think, inspired for that reason. Just obviously we're in a time now where it's hard to like connect with people in public places in general. Yeah. And the idea of public shopping has also kind of gone out the window. That was happening even before the current pandemic. It's just, most people buy stuff by reading Amazon reviews on the internet now. You don't really go into a store unless you're Betty who finds like an awesome tarot card deck and buy things. So
you just like blast me. Great. Should we even explain what you mean by that? Or just keep going?
Betty found an awesome tarot card deck at her local bookstore. That is all.
I can't word.
Okay, so I'm in a book club because I'm 90 years old. I'm a 90-year-old woman.
That doesn't remember the 90s because...
I go to bed at 8 p.m. and I knit sweaters for my friends and I drink a lot of water and I go to my local bookstore and I find tarot cards. And so I'm in a book club. And I had to get a book, and there's a long running joke that I really like Edgar Allan Poe. It's not a joke. I really do like Edgar Allan Poe, but like, it's a meme. So I found Edgar Allan Poe tarot deck. It's by, if you're curious, it's by Rose White Wright, and illustrated by Eugene Smith. I don't know how well you could hear me say that. And I was like, I need that. I need that in my life. So I bought that.
And that is our Betty's Random Thing You Should Buy segment that we're putting into the show.
That's cool for Betty segments. Okay. Yeah, like, but like malls are dying. Like, it's like it's a spectacle, honestly, to watch. Like I don't know if you've seen that Dan Bell's like Dead Malls series where he goes around and just films malls that are dead. It's fascinating, honestly, to look at it.
I was ready for Blockbuster to leave. I'm not ready for like malls to.
They were such a quintessential part of me being a teenager, just because I grew up in an area without a counterculture. So whatever you did was just go to malls on the weekend and
you
like
just went you just went to the mall. Yeah. It was a really great place. You had to meet up with your friends because you like get food, and, like hang out, go to different stores. You know, like your parents would be willing to either drop you off there or let you drive there by yourself because, you know, you're just going to be, they know you're just going to be at the mall. And like that perchance will not exist for future generations. So.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
Part of what inspired the script to kind of get back to that also is just.
Yes.
This, I think, I've noticed this with a lot of people throughout the process of this prolonged quarantine that we're having. People are feeling more, I think, aware of their age, and they feel older. So even though the character's older than I am, there's just, I think, this kind of just, I can feel time passing without a lot happening that everyone's going through that makes them, I think, very reminiscent. And I kind of wanted to capture a little bit of that in the script, too.
Yeah, there's like a weariness that we kind of all share.
Yeah. And a kind of wanting to go back to something you really can't fully go back to.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
yeah.
Like people have been saying, like, you know, what are you going to do when like quarantine's over and things like that? And it's like, it's very like you're acting like quarantine, like just one day, you know, we're going to be in quarantine and the next day we're not. And that's just. That's not how it's going to be, you know, like then this is the new normal for a long time, you know. Sorry if we're getting way off topic.
It's fine.
No, I think it's on topic, right? Because like you in the script, right? Like the script has a happy ending or like an implied hopeful ending is probably a better way to put it, right? Because like at the end, they're like, oh, like you want to go get coffee kind of thing. Like, so it's implied that like, right, like their relationship in some form like may continue, right? But like you start right, the starting point for this whole thing is the sweetness, right, in the first script, right?
Mm-hmm.
and then it becomes kind of bittersweet because like the moment that Betty brought up earlier where the listener still has pictures of the speaker in their wallet, right? I think that's maybe like the second most bittersweet romantic moment in the whole script, right? Because like they didn't forget, they hung on to it, but like, you know, that was also all that time that they spent, you know, remembering this person and not being with them. And then the other one, what I thought was the one that hit me the hardest was the line where they say I guess there's something magical, there's something about this place that keeps people coming back. I did always say it was magical when I used to work here. Actually, now that I think about it, all of my best memories of you are here too. I don't remember how many hours you spent chatting with me when I worked the late shift, but it was a lot. And then he goes on for a bit, and then he talks about the Truman Show, right? Which was the movie that they watched together.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, I watched that movie on repeat for a solid month after you left. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, right in the feels. Right in the feels. Punch
to the gut. Oh, it reminded me so much of you. If that's the same copy they used to have, I feel like it's mine by eminent domain at this point. I was like, I was convinced at that point that the audio was going to end with them like stealing the tape. And just, like, I like wanted them. I like wanted the speaker. I was like, he deserves to have that tape. Like they deserve that tape. They're just gonna walk out. Like Blockbuster wasn't doing late fees anymore as they were closing. Like, fuck it. Just take it.
Fuck it. Yeah. What are you going to do? Call the police?
That was a big thing. Yeah. Cause they were going bankrupt. So people were like, well, Blockbuster was going bankrupt. I guess like, I don't really have to return these.
That actually would be a really interesting documentary of itself. Is just who wound up with those Blockbuster tapes at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the last person to, I guess, get a copy of the Truman Show. I wanted to show like a little bit of pining without it being too much that it was off-putting. Another really big thing I tried to do with this, and I think I mentioned this, is they both stalked each other on social media, but they never messaged each other because messaging each other was too weird. stalking isn't, which is, I think, an experience that even if you're younger than these characters, everyone has had.
I like that. It was like, it's probably something that as we continue to do this, I'm going to continue to harp on is like show, don't tell, right? Mm-hmm. You could have easily just said, I missed you all these years, right? Like outright.
But yeah, instead, like I thought about messaging you, but I never could make myself do it. You know,
exactly. Like, yeah. Right. I watched this movie that we used to watch together for a month after you left, right? Like that's not the same as saying the words, I miss you, but it says the same thing, but in like a completely different way. And I think that's one of the coolest things that we can explore when we're like writing.
Yeah, it's the Princess Bride way of giving exposition. I don't want to say
this thing without saying it outright. Yeah. I love that reference.
I really like, the one where he talks about online dating. He's like, I tried to online date for a while, but it always just felt too... impersonal, I miss the days when you could just meet someone at a video rental store, and then watch the Truman Show 8 billion times, and then I think, to go back on what you were talking about earlier, like how part of the appeal of this second script is that it calls back to an earlier time, and like, yeah, so I think this moment right here really shows that. Where like, it's like this, our relationship might not have been able to, like, I couldn't find something like this in today's day and age. It existed in the past, you know?
Mm. Yeah, I really wanted that. And I also wanted the distance now between the characters to kind of come out in these lines where it's, you can feel that they're close, but they've also been pulled apart. So the character who would have just said, hey, wanna fuck me? In the first part of this, is now a lot more hesitant to make that request. They're trying to kind of dance around what they want, and they're still kind of trying to figure out what they want themselves.
I also like a line, geez, it's hard to believe that there's been two whole Star Wars trilogies since we last kicked. That's great. Great line, Nat. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I was also like, well, the line is painful. But I'm keeping it in. Oh,
yeah. It's a Don Mulaney joke where he's like, that line never gets a laugh, but once you write it, it stays in the act forever.
Anyone who's a fan of my writing, I think, knows that I love putting references in here. And this is, I think, part of why I love references is, one is, I think, the nostalgia trip, but also, like, what they can do.
Yeah.
In terms of like giving you a sense of scene, and also kind of, as Avalon's pointed in it, showing and not telling. They're giving you kind of a, I guess, trellis for your like, oh Christ, this is so cheesy, for your like word, like, which are like vines of ivy to grow over. They kind of give you like this kind of base of like, oh, I can use this to kind of form this structure type thing.
I like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, I can't even think, there is a word for that where like you, like, yeah, you use something, you use an image in order to reference like this whole context behind it. And like, yeah, it's very big in literature and it very big in your scripts and you do it really well.
Oh, thank you.
That's intertextuality. That's what it's called.
Thank you. Yes, Maynard Littner is satisfied.
I also liked when they're... So, like, the back of the video store, right, is no longer the adult video section. It's just a storage unit now for, like, all the promotional materials. So all like the posters and all the stuff, and there's a line where they're kissing and the speaker says, the Batman cutout can judge us all at once. I really like the idea of just a Christian Bale Batman cover, just like grumpy in the corner staring at what was going on. And it set the scene really well because everybody knows a cardboard cutout of like a movie, right? Like, so I think it was a good job of the character being goofy, but also like you giving, like you said, right? You like giving your settings a bit of life.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, it's in one of the trickiest things, I know anyone who writes for GWA knows this, is how to get a line about setting into a script without the character just being like, oh, isn't this light blue wallpaper nice? Like, this desk floor.
Tell me more about the light blue wallpaper. That's an audio.
Yeah. I mean, and it's like, again, when you only have one medium, and I think that's what's so tricky about writing for GWA is you have one person's voice and one character's lines in most cases to convey everything. So you have to do a lot through sound that you can normally do through visual appeal. So thinking about how do I think get like a line in there in a way that's kind of jokey and jovial. So I had a sense of, I think, what this back room was going to look like of just memorabilia. And I'm like, okay, we'll be back there. And what's something that would make sense for the character to comment on without it being like, oh, wow, there's all this stuff back here. Look at this thing and this thing and this thing. Just kind of having one particular reference. And then something I also like to do a lot, I think, with a lot of my scripts, and something that I do probably would actually promote as writing advice, is trust your listener. Your listener has an imagination. Your listener can fill in the blanks. And sometimes if you just reference one particular thing, like a Batman cutout, they can imagine what the rest of the room looks like.
There was instantly an Optimus Prime like cutout in that room for me. Like, after you said that, I was like, oh, I know, like, I know exactly every other cutout that's in that room now.
Yeah, just like, I can picture Batman. Some of the posters, and yeah, like, there's, yeah, a bunch of stuff back there. Yeah, absolutely. You said about, like, trusting the listener. It can be hard as a writer to, like, balance that fine line between like exposition and trust, you know, like you're like, I hope they get this part. It's like, I hope that they like, because I don't want to say it, I just want to imply it, or yeah, like I just want to give like a little bit, and you know, and hopefully they will be able to fill in the blank.
Yeah, it's really great, and it seems like that worked for both of you. So in those moments, you're just like, yes.
Yeah, absolutely, it really did. And I like how in the first part, you know, he's talking about like how like he's like egging up the speaker is egging the listener on to be louder, and then in the second part, the speaker is telling the listener to be quiet.
Yeah, there was a fun duality that I knew was going to be very. So when I'm writing, I set some stuff up really early. Most people who I talk to know that I tend to plan more than I just kind of wing it. But as I'm exploring the character, I do develop in more and more detail. But one idea that I started with was just that idea of just, oh, what if in the beginning the listener was just like loud and wanting to have more? And if in the second script they want to be quiet? It's kind of just exploring the duality of how, as I think you get older, you start recognizing the importance of silence a little bit more. And recognizing this kind of ability that you start to grow the older you get in terms of being able to kind of pick up what's being left unsaid in those kind of quieter moments and starting to value them a lot more than the thing that you need to say right then.
That was actually something I was hoping to bring up. I think this is like my last like major point, actually. This is more of a me thing. So I was actually really curious about this. It was just something that I noticed, right? Like, as a consistency between the two, like, time versions of the character, you use the word give a lot, and I think that's really interesting. Like, where it says, here, let me give you an example. I lost this. Oh, here we go, right? It starts off, like, stuff, like, it was just an interesting, it starts off very normal, right? Give me your honest opinion about this movie. You've given me the honest opinion. But then, like, when you write your sex scenes, actually, I noticed that you use this, give me all you got.
Mm-hmm. I noted that too. Yeah, that was really a good callback.
Show me how much you want it, right? Give me what I want. I've waited for so long. Give it to me. Please give it to me, right? It goes on. Give me more, babe, right? And I just thought that was interesting because I tend to go in the opposite direction, and I actually liked where you went with it because I do a lot of like take it in audios. Sorry, and I liked that you created. I don't know if this is just like a style, because I think everybody has their own like quirks and like catch like default things that they fall back to in sex, right? So like mine is take it. So I was wondering if one of your fallback like phrases in like sex scenes is like give it to me or like give this to me.
It is.
Okay.
It's actually
that's really cool. Thanks. We have very opposite like fallback phrases.
It's a line that I use a lot to build tensions when you're just like, I need an extra beat here. Because sex scenes are all about pacing. Same. So you're just like, need a beat here to kind of add to the sex scene. And it's something I actually feel a little bit self-conscious about because I was like, I use this line too much.
No, I like it because you, no. Yeah. I mean, I use mine a lot too, right? I use a lot of take it. So, but it's like you, it's like a very like almost like demanding kind of, thing. I think it adds, right? It adds like a little bit of urgency. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's trying to, the listener's always trying to come, at least I assume. Although sometimes I listen to audios for just purely aesthetic reasons. but like this idea of just encouraging the listener through this very simple phrase is, I think, a lot of why I put it in there of just like, come on, it's okay. Mm-hmm. You can do this. Come. I would probably do it less if it's like a rape audio, but in a circumstance where it's like consensual. it makes a lot, I think, a lot of sense. It's just kind of a beat that I like to put in there.
That's really cool. I like that. I like thinking about other like people just having different like almost trademark beats that they just fall back on. I really like that.
Thanks. I'll keep that in mind.
I'm the same way. That's why I noticed it. I was like, is this just her version of my like take it? Like
now I have to look through all my scripts to see what I do. I have no idea.
Oh,
next
yeah,
week.
Next week.
I like that. That was a really fun. That was a fun realization.
Yeah, I mean, it is highlighted more in this one just because it's about the performer and listener kind of searching for something together. So, especially during the second one, they're almost like. I guess a way of phrasing it would be they're hungry. They're just hungry for something that they can't satisfy or itching for something they can't satisfy.
Yeah.
It's part of that. But it's also just fun. I love it. So. Or the line. So yeah. It's kind of a beat thing.
And I think it works. I think it works really well. Oh, and it's just great. The whole thing is just great. 10 out of 10. Good job.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
So we picked this script I picked this script actually for a reason. It's because this is the first set of scripts, I guess, that I beta'd for Nat back before we were really even like good friends, like back in December, which doesn't feel, I will say it easily feels like forever ago.
In GWA time, it is forever ago. So
it is kind of, yeah. So, this script in that way has always kind of been sort of special to me. I really like it a lot, and like it's been kind of like a wild ride getting here and like being friends with Nat. And like it's just really cool to look back on it now and talk to you about it for that reason.
Yeah, I have a lot of fondness for this one just because I really like the idea and concept. Also just side note, it's really weird to like talk about your writing for this long. So good luck next week, Betty.
Excited.
It's also, and I think you were commenting on this when you were baiting. It is A for A. I think it references the give it to me line as well, because you can't talk about body parts in this. And I didn't want to talk about body parts. I wanted to talk about emotions, and I wanted to talk about feelings.
Yes.
And I mean,
go ahead.
Sorry,
you can go ahead. This script, I think, is really a good, good one to study if you are interested in doing either 4A or like A4A or A for A, because it like really does a really great job conveying like the intimacy and the sex without mentioning body parts. Cause like it feels like when you're writing it that you kind of have to, but here especially it shows that you don't.
Yeah.
And 10 out of 10 for that.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, it is a different, I think, style or stylistic approach. It doesn't mention a lot of sex positions and a lot's left to the listener's imagination, but I think that can still work.
Yeah, great. Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's something that, therefore, anyone can perform.
What is that thing that I think it was the thing you told me one time where we talking about like A for
everyone
A,
said, has like, an asshole.
Yes. So like
everyone has an asshole.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Everyone has nipples too, so yep. Like you can you still can talk about body parts and be A for A, but just like you just have to be selective in that way.
Yeah, and I mean, I do think this is really cute as a gay script too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Be very fun to hear a version of that. That was that one. And I do think I put notes in that are like, "Hey, if you want to reference body parts, you can. Just feel free to add those lines."
Yeah, absolutely. Another note I should have said probably earlier, but like one of my big pieces of advice for people looking to get into writing is to study scripts. That's part of the reason why we did this podcast. This script is a really good one. We're going to try to highlight scripts that we liked things about. Honestly, just like read as many as you can. Like literally like steal things that you like from other people, like, you know, like how this person did this and like this person did that. Like, don't steal their actual writing.
Yeah, Betty.
But, like, yeah, sorry. Don't steal what don't steal their writing. Like, don't like, plagiarize, but like study the way that people do things and like just like copy it, you know, like the way Nat did A for A here, or like even just like formatting, you know, like That's a really great place to start.
And you should start by reading all of Betty's scripts because she's awesome.
Oh my god. And then you should read all of Nat's scripts. And then you should listen to all of Avalon's audios.
Please, God, no.
Also, I've written 150 scripts. Do not read all of them because that is a lot of reading now.
Is that a challenge?
Betty.
That's a challenge. Sounded like a challenge to me.
I've already read. I've already got a good head start. If we're going to be honest.
150 episodes of Writer's Block later.
We should do Consent in the Kool-Aid one day just as a shit post. Oh, I think boy. We had talked about that. Anyway.
Oh yeah, we have to do Kool-Aid Man at some point.
By the way, if you are listening to this, we are not going to focus solely on our own scripts. We just wanted to start with us. So we.
That was what I was hoping to get to, yeah.
Yes.
We would love to talk about other people's scripts. So if there are people who are happy about the idea of coming on and like being a guest and like sort of letting us discuss the script with you, and I don't know how this works.
Yeah, so we want to explore a lot of different styles of writing because a lot of writers in GWA, pretty much everyone, has their own unique voice and own unique style, and it's amazing. And I want to get to know all of them. Every single one.
Yes, yes. Collect all the friends. Become friends with everybody.
Script friends.
But next week we will be covering Betty's script so she can get her turn in the hot seat. And then we will probably be taking requests from listeners or just anyone who wants to come on.
No, after that we're doing one of Avalon's things.
Oh, jeez.
We don't know exactly what yet, but we're doing one of Avalon's after that.
Fine. After we finish torturing each other, then we will be looking for guest speakers.
For guests to torture, yeah. It'll be a grand old time for everybody.
So I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and we'll see you soon. Bang.
Bye-bye.
Bye.